Hank Mason has joined us on Sports Byline USA, and we're reminiscing about the Negro Leagues. Hank, at the end of the last hour, you were talking about how much you got paid. How much did you and maybe even some of the other players, generally speaking, get paid in the Negro Leagues?
$350 a month. That's how much we got paid.
What about the star players in the league?
Well, I imagine some of the star players, they were paid higher than we were, maybe $700 or $800 a month. I'm not sure, and I can't say how much that they got paid, but I know what I got paid.
Let me also ask you about a Negro League game. Can you set the scene for us? Can you give us kind of a verbal picture of what a Negro League game was like, from the atmosphere to the stadium to the fans and everything?
Yes, we played in Kansas City at Blues Stadium. Now, let me tell you something. In 1952, when I pitched 16 innings to beat the Philadelphia Stars 3-2, we had something like maybe 14,000 fans in the stand. St. Louis Cardinals was playing the Cincinnati Reds in St. Louis, which is about 240 miles away from Kansas City. And they had 3,000 fans. Now, what do you think? Why do you think that Branch Rickey signed Jackie Robinson? Because they wanted to see a different brand of baseball. You see, the Negro League, the Negro League players, they invented the double steal. They invented the drag bunt. They invented a whole bunch of things that the Major League players wasn't doing that was excited to fans. And let me tell you another thing. The Negro League was the first league that played night baseball. And the Kansas City Monarchs invented night baseball because they had trucks hauling the transformers from one town to another. And that's what invented night baseball.
I know in talking to Buck O'Neill, Buck used to tell me about the Sunday games, how special they were because African-Americans would go to church, and then they'd come out to the ballpark and watch the game, and they were all dressed in their Sunday finery.
Let me tell you, when we were in Kansas City, and we would have a game in Kansas City, the preachers would dismiss church early so that the fans could come out to the ballpark. And they had their ties and shirts and little straw hats and everything on. And that's just the way it was. They loved baseball in Kansas City. And they loved the Kansas City Monarchs. And let me tell you another thing. The Kansas City Monarchs was the Cadillac of the Negro League. Now, you believe that.
And why was that, Hank?
Because we dressed the best, we had the best bus, we got paid on time, and everything else that went with it. Never missed a payday.
You mentioned about the audiences being so large for the games and everything. Well, I'm sure that it was predominantly black, the fans, but how many white fans would come out to watch Negro League baseball?
Oh, there were some white fans. I just can't put my finger on a percentage, but they liked to watch black baseball because it was so exciting. And that's the whole thing why Branch Rickey find Jackie Robinson. It was an economical thing. You know, he wanted to draw people into the ballpark. And after Jackie Robinson got to Brooklyn and got to stealing bases, got to hitting doubles and stealing home and all of that, Ebbets Field started filling up again.
Let me also ask you about the atmosphere back in the 40s and the 50s. I think pretty much everybody knows what society was like. But was part of the motivation for the black baseball players in the Negro Leagues the fact that they were being kept out of the major leagues? Was there ever a time where all of a sudden they, you know, the Negro League players said, "Hey, look, I know I'm good enough to play in the major leagues," and that became a driving, burning force for the Negro League player?
I think so. Let me tell you this. Some of the best baseball players in the world come out of the Negro League. And Kansas City Monarchs sent more black baseball, well, they had to be black, sent more baseball players to the major league than any other team in the Negro League, or maybe all of them combined. There was Jackie Robinson, Henry Mason, Pancho Herrera, Ernie Banks. All of those guys came out of the Negro League. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, all of those guys came out of the Negro League, and they were great baseball players. Now, I wasn't great, but I did make it.
Yeah, back in 1955, you broke the barriers by becoming the first African-American to play for the Schenectady Blue Jays, which was a Philadelphia Phillies farm team. What type of atmosphere did you find, or the fact that, you know, that the color barrier had already been broken by Jackie Robinson, that it was a more hospitable atmosphere for black players?
Well, let me tell you, when I went to Schenectady, Jackie had already broke the color barrier. But things wasn't just right at that time. I have a friend, I'm not going to call his name, but a white boy that was the only one that would room with me while we were on the road. As a matter of fact, I just come back from visiting him. But he was the only one that would room with me. And that's just the way it was then. I had a roommate. When I'd go in at night, maybe 9, 10, 11 o'clock, he would be in the bed with his head all covered up. When I would wake up in the morning, he would be up, took his shower, and gone. That's the only time that I saw him until I saw him at the ballpark.
You had your opportunities with the Philadelphia Phillies in the major leagues a couple of times. Tell me about the first game you pitched in and what your reaction was and what it meant to you.
I tell you, my first game with the Philadelphia Phillies, let me tell you this first. I don't think the Philadelphia Phillies wanted a black baseball player. The same way with the Boston Red Sox. The Boston Red Sox didn't want a black ball player. I think, and if you look at my record and my statistics, I should have been in the major league a long time before some of the rest of the baseball players, some of the rest of those white baseball players that went ahead of me. Pumpsy Green with the Albany Senators, who was a hell of a second baseman, should have been with the Boston Red Sox a long time. But that's okay. I finally made it. Didn't stay long because I didn't get a chance.
We only have a minute left, Hank.
Eddie Sawyer told me in 1959 or 60, he said, "I'm going to keep you with me, Hank, because I think that you can do the job." But when they changed managers, I'm not going to call his name, he cut me in Chicago for a guy named Conley, who was playing basketball with the Boston Celtics. And he said, "No, I'm going to send you back to Buffalo." Hell, I'd had a hell of a season with Buffalo. I'd had a 12-3, and I don't know how many saves, maybe 20 saves. But I had to go back to Buffalo because Gene Conley was coming in.
Hank, I want to thank you very much for sharing your memories about the Negro League and also about the games that you pitched in, and also your contribution to baseball as you and all the other Negro League players gave to baseball as well. Thank you very much for joining us, Hank.
And thank you, sir.
Hank Mason with us on Sports Byline, a right-handed pitcher who began his career with the Kansas City Monarchs of the Negro Leagues. It was back in 1951 that he was offered a tryout with the Kansas City Monarchs. The club manager at that time was Buck O'Neill, and he was so impressed with Mason that he signed him with that team. But as you heard him say, he actually was a third baseman, but he was signed as a pitcher with the Monarchs. We hope you enjoyed it. A little piece of baseball history. I'm Ron Barr. We continue with more of you in Sports Byline.